I'm back, by the grace of God. And thanks to all my friends at Press TV and to all our viewers around the world for their prayers and their good wishes over the last 6 days after what happened to me on the streets of London, which, for legal reasons, I can no longer talk about, and I'd appreciate if you didn't either. This is Comment. It's the big conversation. It's the great debate. But it can only be a conversation. Indeed, it can only be a debate if you join in. That's why, above all, I need your telephone calls. 44208-601-4555. You call us, we'll call you back, establish a clear line. And remember, if you get on the television with me, the volume on your television has to be at zero. Or I'll have to move swiftly on because no one will understand either of us. You can also SMS the show on 44780008066, and it'll come up here on the comment wall. You can email the show also at comment@presstv.co.uk, and you can tweet us at comment_presstv. I'm afraid that Iraq and Palestine continue to dominate the news, and not in a good way, and therefore they continue to dominate the agenda here at Comment. In the House of Commons earlier this week, and most especially on the BBC this very day, David Cameron and Philip Hammond, the Prime Minister of Britain and the Foreign Secretary of Britain — it's still difficult for me to get my head around the fact that Great Britain now has Philip Hammond as its Foreign Secretary — cast everything into confusion. They said, in response to questioning about the poor British hostage that's now threatened with hideous, repugnant, disgusting execution and videotape at the hands of what they call ISIL, they said that they were prepared to bomb. They were prepared to bomb them in Iraq, and they were prepared to bomb them in Syria. But at the same time, they said that they would not coordinate their attacks with the government of Syria, which would make their bombing an act of war by Britain against Syria. When asked, given that Syria has been fighting these very same people for more than 3 years and has lost so much blood, so much treasure, so much heritage, so much destruction at the hands of these people, wouldn't it be more obvious and logical to coordinate with the Republic and its armed forces against Al-Qaeda in all its various forms? David Cameron answered, "We don't need permission of anybody to bomb Syria because Bashar al-Assad is a war criminal." Well, first of all, he's not a war criminal. He's accused by David Cameron of being a war criminal. He hasn't been charged with war crimes, let alone tried, let alone convicted. So it's an entirely straw man that David Cameron has erected, but it's pregnant with very many serious consequences. Because if Britain joins in the war on Iraq and on Syria, in Iraq they'll be able to say the Iraqi government invited us in, but in Syria they will not. And if any of their rockets, any of their bombs hit people, installations, armed forces belonging to the Syrian government, we will then be in the war in Syria that we, in the House of Commons, forbade David Cameron to join just last August, just over 1 year ago. That will put us at war with Syria's friends. Maybe not hand-to-hand fighting, but it will put us on a war footing with the Islamic Republic of Iran, with Russia, and with China. That would be a very perilous place to be for bankrupt Britain under a Tory government struggling through its last months in office. So how would you describe the UK's policy on ISIL? Confused? Definitely. Is Israel paying any kind of price for the torture and violence in which they have been engaged? I ask because there's supposed to be a ceasefire, But Israel is still in the Gaza Strip with bulldozers and tanks, and Israel is on a rampage in what they call the West Bank, arresting scores of people, torturing them, falsely imprisoning them, and inflicting massive violence, both through their settlers and their settler defense force in what's called the occupied West Bank. And nobody is doing anything about it. In the Ukraine, the Russian government, which isn't even in Ukraine, is being threatened with war, never mind sanctions, by one summit after another of European Union leaders and NATO leaders in Cardiff and Newport this week. Well, Israel is actually in Palestine, actually occupying somebody else's country, and actually involved in the killing of thousands of them in just the last few weeks. Nobody, but nobody, is making them pay any price for this. Indeed, it's business as usual. Britain is still selling them weapons. The United States is still giving them billions of dollars, all the while complaining that while Gaza was being destroyed, the Israeli government was getting ready to announce yet another massive settlement, a new city, a fourth city in the West Bank for Israeli settlers. Britain and America condemn it in words, but they don't do anything. Indeed, they keep doing what they were already doing, which is paying for and arming all of it. So I'm asking you, is Israel being condemned enough? What would be the punishment that should fit its crimes? Now, I'm standing up. I may sit down at some stage during the show because I'm still in a lot of pain. But I'll take Aidan in London, who's always worth hearing from. Aidan, welcome.
Hi, George.
Welcome to the show. Thanks, brother.
I've been trying to get through to you for weeks, but God bless you for calling me tonight. I tell you that.
Thank you.
Secondly, I want to wish you a speedy recovery.
Thanks,
after
brother.
This attack on you.
Thank you.
Last week.
Thanks.
Believe me, I was hurt just as much as you were, George.
Thank you, brother.
I know what happened, and I know why it happened. And these British-based Israeli lovers who are trying to basically shut you up obviously aren't doing a good job, because tonight you're in full fire.
Yeah.
And that's what makes you George Galloway.
Thank you, Aidan.
That's what makes you what you are, and that's what makes me want to speak to you in the first place.
God bless you. God bless you. Thanks. As long as God gives me breath, Aidan, I'll be speaking.
This is all you need. That and something in between your legs. And you've got a lot of that. Believe me, brother.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. And they can't stop you from talking. They can't stop me from talking. Yeah. And is what happened to you last week happened to me a long time ago. All it did was make me even more vociferous. It made me shout even more. It made me even more determined. And to hear what you said, I heard what you said about the way you London changed for you after walking around all these years. Same happened to me. When I got attacked, it was not the same London. Couldn't go out in the streets anymore. Looked at it differently. Had to look over my shoulders. Didn't want to go out at night. But believe you me, George, all it does is make you more determined, and all you want to do is fight more, and you will come out better, and God bless you, and keep the good work up.
God bless you, Aidan. Thank you for that beautiful call. I appreciate it very much indeed. John is in France. John, welcome to the show. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah. What it amounts to is, in my opinion, that it's topsy-turvy world. If they say that they're being attacked, it means that they're attacking.
Yes.
If they say the other people in the wrong, it means they're in the wrong.
Yeah.
And people stand for it. And all that it really amounts to about Russia is that Crimea belonged to Russia, and it was given away by...
By Khrushchev.
Yeah.
By Khrushchev on a drunken Sunday night.
Exactly, precisely.
Yeah.
And Russia stood for it as long as Ukraine stayed on their side, if you want to call it that.
Yeah.
And instead of that, Ukraine has decided they want to go to the West, and they're screaming about Crimea. They're also screaming about the Russian inhabitants that are doing this, and their friends, the Russian soldiers, no doubt a problem there, and they're blaming Putin, etc., etc. If Putin wanted to do something nasty, I'm sure he could do it with his army and so forth.
Well, Putin said yesterday that if Russia wanted to, they could conquer Kiev itself in 2 hours.
Well, I'm sure they could.
And there's no doubt at all about that. But he added that we don't want to. We don't want to invade anybody.
Can I just remind people, 27 million Russians died in the big war. 27 million, and I think if my memory serves me, less than 500,000 Americans and less than 500,000 British. I don't know the other figures. And who are the people who are wanting the war all the time? It's always the Russians. It's always and they were being encircled, and it's their fault. I can't stand it. I mean, I've got no axe to grind for any of it, but I don't like my intelligence being insulted, that's all. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Not only do I understand it, everyone listening has understood the power and clarity of what you had to say. I was on the BBC Radio 4 The World Tonight on Tuesday night with a recently retired general, a very nice man, except he thinks that we need to be ready to be turned into nuclear dust in order to defend Donetsk. Well, I'll tell you what, John, neither I nor you nor 99.99999% of the people of Britain are ready to be turned into a nuclear winter for the sake of Donetsk. We don't know where it is. We don't know how to say it. We don't know how to spell it. It's a city of Russian people being bombarded by their own government, which is usually a cue for the West to start invading the government that's doing the bombing. In this case, it's a cue for the Western governments to threaten war on the people who are not bombing it. John, in France, thanks for your call. Mansour is in Nottingham, in England. How would you describe the UK's policy on ISIL, Mansour?
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Wa alaikum salam.
The policy, where shall I start with it, George? It's totally hypocritical. When these so-called ISIL was in Syria and they were bidding up, Britain was more than happy to send them weapons,
yes,
communication, logistics.
But money, yet, weapons, material, them, diplomatic, media
it,
support.
You name it, they sent it. But now they're becoming a threat. Now that they own British people my age, people in my community, so-called, are going there. Now, all of a sudden, they're a danger. It's a complete joke. One thing I want to ask is that they went to bomb Iraq on a pretense of nuclear weapons, which they didn't even have. Yet, the Iraqi people are being tortured by this ISIL, and they're reluctant to attack them. What's going on?
Well, that's a very good point.
What's going on?
They announced today, so on the front page of the newspaper this evening, that the British are going to arm the Kurdish Peshmerga in Kurdish Iraq in order to fight ISIL in the north of Iraq.
So what happens when the Kurds beat the ISIL?
Mansour,
what happens after that?
They at the same time announced they would not arm the government in Baghdad until that government was of their liking.
Even though
the government that's been there for the last decade came to power on their tanks, it still wasn't good enough. So,
divide and conquer.
If they wanted to, they could be flooding the government in Baghdad and the army operating out of Baghdad with weapons. They could be bombing ISIL everywhere. But they're not.
They could take ISIL out in 30 seconds, George.
There's only 20,000 of them, we're told.
They could take them out
like that. Why don't they do so?
My opinion is that ISIL, it serves the interest of Israel.
Yeah. Well, I don't know whose interest it's serving, Mansour, but it's definitely serving somebody's interest.
Or they are going to claim...
Or they would never have built it up in the first place.
Exactly.
And they would now be crushing it underfoot. Mansour, thanks for the call, brother.
Thank you.
Let me go to Rob in London. How would you describe the UK's policy in Iraq, Rob?
Yeah, evening, George. Well, to be honest with you, George, I would describe it as one that seems to vary with whatever their agenda is. A few years ago, it was different when the Americans wanted to arm them. You know, they just chop and change according to what they wish to do.
And I expect that from then, Rob. But but what I don't understand is why the entire, virtually, with one or two exceptions, the entire media estate in this country allows them to get away with that without even pointing out these contradictions.
Well, George, because I don't like pointing out things that are not healthy to their cause.
Yeah. But you'd think there would be some professional pride. On the radio this morning, when Cameron said that Bashar al-Assad was a war criminal, why didn't the interviewer say, when was he convicted? Where? Which court?
Yeah, that's right, George. But I think we all know from the experience of Gaza that these news outlets don't have any professional
Especially
pride,
the BBC, I'm afraid to say.
Basically. Yeah. I would like to ask you one thing, George. Why is it that Parliament voted against the bombing of Syria, and yet we seem to be circumventing that with the bombing of Syria and ISIS?
Well, it's a very good point. We won the vote by just 13 votes. I've said before, four speeches, one of which was mine, four speeches from both sides of the House, two and two, came at a critical point in the debate. Everyone says, all the journalists, everyone that was there, all the MPs, that those four speeches turned the debate, and we defeated Cameron. And he palely came to the dispatch box and said, I get it. There will be no military action in Syria. That is the position of the British Parliament. He refused to recall Parliament, even though I demanded its recall every single week, every week of the whole summer holiday. He refused to recall it. There's been no vote. And now he says, we're going to bomb Syria, whether the Syrian government likes it or not, and we're not going to talk to the Syrian government because they're war criminals.
Exactly, George.
So, that's an act of war, Rob.
Yeah, I know. And in the end...
Because I'll tell you what would happen, Rob. They'd start bombing ISIS, and they'd finish bombing the Syrian regime's forces.
Yeah, that is... I believe that is part of the agenda, George, that once they have finished with ISIS, they will move on to Assad under the pretext.
Yeah.
Basically. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob. Great call. Lamine is in Leeds on the same subject. Lamine, welcome.
Hi, George. You know, welcome, you know.
Go ahead, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, I'm going to talk about the Western policies on ISIS and these Syrian Arab people and these Middle East people. First of all, the Middle East leaders, they are fools. Second, ISIS, it's been created by the arrogant powers for their interest. Who knows it's their interest? They know it. We don't know. They never say it. And then secondly, if ISIS killing people, but they are not saying that it's terrorists, you know, they say, you know, rebels are fighting against Maliki's government. But now they are calling them terrorists. What kind of policies, I want to know, what kind of policies are these?
Well, it's insanity. It's a misuse of the English language to describe it as a policy. And you've heard me say before, I told William Hague when he was Foreign Secretary this, I told him he had the misfortune to be trapped in a lift with me. I told them, I'm not surprised that you're wrong. You've been wrong all your life. But you've never been insane before. Your policy of building up Al-Qaeda and its offshoots in Syria is actual insanity. First of all, if it succeeded in destroying Syria, what kind of Syria would you have? An Al-Qaeda Syria on the Mediterranean? In that sensitive geostrategic place? You want Al-Qaeda to come to power? And secondly, what about when Al-Qaeda comes home? What about when they get on the plane to Leeds, Bradford, Birmingham, London, Glasgow, Aberdeen, Cardiff? They'll be all over the place with years of experience of cutting people's throats. Lamin, thanks for the call. I want to press on. We're discussing Palestine and Iraq. How could it be otherwise? Sepper is in London on Iraq. Sepper, welcome.
How are you doing, George? Firstly, I would like to applaud you on the compassionate work and the compassionate individual and the being that you are. And
thank you, brother.
I hope that your position will still remain as the voice of the voiceless all over the world.
As long as God gives me breath, I'll be here.
Not really. It's very unfortunate. I mean, the position at the moment in Iraq, it's devastating. The Western powers are having a double standard agenda towards the Iraqi people and towards the region. I believe that the recent actions of our Prime Minister, unfortunately, yet again, in broad daylight, goes against every single belief that we have as a democracy in this country. If that is what you want, you can call it democracy anymore. The fact that, you know, they are coming and condemning the Caliphate movement in Iraq, and at the same time, you know, in the back rooms are supporting
Supporting it in Syria, and they're not doing anything meaningful other than in the Kurdish region to fight it.
Feeding the unfortunate regimes that are supporting this cause, which is Qatar, the royal family of Qatar and Saudi Arabia. Yeah. And you know, through the back in the back rooms.
And where, by the way, in the last month, Saudi Arabia has publicly on television beheaded one person every single day. 30 days, 30 public beheadings on television. There is a madcap spree in Saudi Arabia of public beheadings, and not one of them has ended up on the so-called mainstream British news. Let me talk quickly to Tommy in the UK. Tommy, go ahead.
Assalamu alaikum, brother.
Wa alaikum salam. Go ahead, Tom. Are you in Glasgow?
Indeed. I hope you're okay, George. Hope you're okay.
By the grace of God, I'm good. And I'll be in Glasgow. I'll be in Glasgow over the next couple of days, Tommy.
Just vote yes, George. Just vote yes.
All right, Tom. Anyway, thanks for the call. We're talking tonight about Iraq, about Palestine. We're asking, how come Israel continues to get away with it? And we're asking, what can you make of David Cameron's utterly confused, unconstitutional stance on ISIS in Syria? He's breaking an extant decision of the British House of Commons against bombing Syria. Now, if he would talk to the Syrian government about where they wanted to bomb, whom they wanted to bomb, and take the permission of the Syrian government, as they're doing in Iraq, that would be one thing. But he says he won't talk to the Syrian government. He's going to bomb Syria anyway. Now, if you think that that's a constitutional outrage, and moreover, even more seriously, a recipe for disaster, then you're with me. So I've got to take a very short break, just for 3 minutes, for a short news bulletin. We're talking Iraq and Palestine, and God willing, I'll still be here when you come back in 3 minutes. Don't go away. Welcome back to Comment with me, George Galloway, here on Press TV, still the voice of the voiceless. We're discussing Palestine and Iraq. How could it be otherwise? In fact, the entire world's eyes are now fixed upon that region and upon those two countries in particular. Those two countries where blood is running like rivers. In Gaza, we have a pause, can only be described as that, in the mass killing by what they call Israel of the captive Palestinian population in what David Cameron once, only once, described as the biggest prison camp in the world. Locked up, nowhere to run, nowhere to hide, being killed like fish in a barrel. Except they weren't fish, they were mainly women and children. Israel is paying absolutely no price for the crimes that they committed. And indeed, they have now announced further crimes, this time in the West Bank, as they call it. In the West Bank, as they call it, they're about to build an entire city on illegally occupied land for their foreign settlers, making all talk of this so-called two-state solution completely ludicrous. In Iraq, we have a state of total confusion. We have a state of total confusion vis-a-vis Syria and total duplicity vis-a-vis Iraq. If the British government and the American government wanted to deal with what's called ISIL in Iraq, they could easily do so. This is not a huge army. It's not an army of unvanquishable proportions. It is an army, a ragbag coalition of former shop assistants from various provincial English towns, Chechens, Libyans, Tunisians, Egyptians, people from all over the world except Iraq. Nobody has yet pointed out to me a single spokesman for ISIL who's speaking with an Iraqi accent. Every single video that they put out has either foreigners who don't speak Arabic at all or Arabs who don't speak in Iraqi accents. These mercenaries, I don't mean mercenaries for money, I'm not accusing them of fighting for money. They're mercenaries to sectarian hatred. And they are there wreaking havoc and mass murder. You just saw on the video wall there, you just saw men in their underwear being marched to a mass slaughter. Helpless men, prisoners, in a total affront to anything called Islam, being murderously executed. And we're being asked to believe, when they kill, as they have in such hideous manner, when they kill American journalists and videotape it, I don't recommend watching these tapes, by the way, we're told that these people are the biggest threat to human civilization on the planet today. Well, I told them that when we were giving them guns and money and media and diplomatic and political support in Syria. And you simply cannot have a policy where the same group of people are your allies on one side of the border, and when they cross to the other side of the border, they are murderous maniacs. They're either murderous maniacs or they're not. And I believe they are. But I believe they are in both countries. Now, the obvious thing to do is to help the government in Baghdad to deal with this threat, to give it the weapons it's already paid for but has not had delivered, to give them training, to give them help. And the regional governments, Turkey, Iran, even Saudi Arabia, give them military support. But that's not what's happening. We're giving military support to the Kurdish fighters in the north precisely because we want to facilitate the breakup of Iraq, the breakaway of the Kurdish part of Iraq with the city of Kirkuk in their pocket. We want that. That's why we're building up the Peshmerga in the Kurdish part of Iraq, but not doing anything to help the vast majority of Iraq who are still at the mercy of this terrorist army called ISIL. And we are threatening now, from today, David Cameron's threat to, in defiance of a decision of the British Parliament, to begin bombing Syria without the permission of the Syrian government, whom David Cameron has condemned as war criminals, even though no trial has taken place. I don't want to talk to Tommy because he came on to talk about the Scottish referendum, and that's not on the agenda tonight. So, Tommy, hang up your phone and don't phone me again because I don't appreciate it. We're talking, though, to Ramzan, who is in Wales and always worth hearing from. Ramzan, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum to you, George.
Wa alaikum salam, welcome.
And God bless you, inshallah.
Thank you.
The incident happened to you. It's a really appalling.
Thank you.
Putting that on the side, it's disgusting, it is.
Thank you.
But there we go. Some human beings are animals, you know? They don't want to hear the truth. And basically, what it is, George, we are sleeping with the devil, right, who is supporting the ISIS, right? And then we are not, that's the reason why we are not condemning them, because the Americans, at their bases all over the world, is getting free oil from Saudi Arabia, who are funding these terrorists. Well, they are not they are prison in their own jails back home. They released them free. They are paying them to go and kill innocent human being. The ISIS killed so many Shias. Nobody have talked about that, Mr. Cameron or Mr. Obama or any of the other European communities or their leaders. No, it's just one of their soldiers, which is appalling, mind you. I'm not agreeing with them at all because it's disgusting, right? They are using the banner of Islam, killing innocent human being. Any loss of life which is lost.
Well, you saw it there, Ramzan, on the video, carrying the banner of the Prophet himself.
Yeah, but I mean,
they were marching helpless captives to a mass slaughter.
Yes.
What a blasphemy.
Yeah, but I mean, George, anybody can carry the banner. I mean, you can give it to anybody.
Yes.
You are wave this flag, right? You are representing Islam. Islam is, you know, jihad. What is the meaning of jihad?
Of course.
Jihad is the meaning of fighting within yourself, with your devil or with your wrong inside yourself, inside your soul.
Indeed.
This is jihad, the Prophet have taught us in the Quran, right? Yeah. Not jihad going around killing people.
No.
They have interpreted as a jihad under the wrong Islamic rules, right?
Well, you're jihad right, you're right, Ramzan, as always, and I'm grateful for your call. I want to go over the water to Ireland to talk to Paddy about Israel and Palestine. Paddy, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, George. Thank you very much for taking my call.
Welcome.
I would like to mention that Israel is not being condemned enough for the mass murders and the child killings that they've done. And the whole world, the entire world, should be ashamed of themselves for not speaking up against this, not just genocide, this is an ecocide also, because they're taking away the livelihoods of Palestinian men, women and children and the future of the babies in Palestine. That has been born. I'm sorry, I'm a little bit emotional about it.
No, you're quite right. You wouldn't be human if you weren't emotional about it.
Well, please God, George, if with your voice and the coverage that you have, people will listen to everything that you're saying, and they will recognize that the filthy things that the Israeli, I hate even using the word Israeli, the Zionists are doing now should not be a reflection on the Jewish community.
Quite so. Paddy, I'm doing a lot in Ireland. 1,000 people came to the Ulster Hall in Belfast to hear me speak just a couple of weeks ago. Mm-hmm. I'm coming soon to Derry and Newry and Cork and Dublin. I hope you catch up with me at one of those venues. Paddy, thanks for the call. Barry's in Norway. Barry, welcome to the show.
Hello, George.
Yes, welcome, sir. Go ahead.
Thank you, Honourable. And first of all, my regards to you the attack you had. Let me start with that, definitely. My heart goes for you, George.
Thank you, brother. Thank you.
And we all support you, George. You know, they can take you away for life. You know, you are always with us.
Thank
and
you.
And the whole world is with all the good people of the world are with you.
Thank you, Barry. God bless you.
My answer to this, Britain, you know, Britain and America and their allies, they are the one who created these people. And you see, I could remember when they were creating this group, Assad and Iran were even, you know, warning them, look, one day these people will turn over back on you. And look what they did, you know, to these two great, you know, journalists, you know, by cutting their necks for no reason, innocent people being killed because of the support of, you know, Britain and, you know, their double standard they are playing. And also, look, these two people, they've killed them. And look what happens to this Israel, you know, this Palestinian, how to call it, Palestinian war. How many people died in Palestine?
More than 2,000.
Right. And then look at the Western media. In fact, where is the condolence comes from the Western media, you know?
No, nothing. They continue to describe it as Israel bombing tunnels, even though they knew they were actually bombing women and children.
Yeah, my point is, George, when is the Middle East going to land?
Well, I don't know. I'm trying my best. Barry, thanks for the call. I'm going to stay in Norway. Talk to Hassan. Two calls from Norway in quick succession. Hassan, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Mr. George. Thank you. Thank you for taking my call. And I would like to start by saying may God protect you and for the good work you have been doing. And may God thank you very much for what you have done for the Palestinian people.
Thank you.
And what I'd like to say, I'm very sorry for what happened, and I'm sure there are very few people like you who have done a lot for humanity, as it is. So I'd like to thank you from my side. It's my first time to call you. So thank you very much. I'm been following up what you've been doing.
La shukra la wajib, as we say in Arabic. Don't thank me for my duty. Hassan, go ahead. What do you think?
Yes. Sorry, my view on the UK issue is that, of course, Syria is a free country. It's a country by itself, and people just can't go and run over some other countries by trying to impose their own ideas on another country. So if they would like to do anything in Syria, so should we contact the government which is there,
exactly,
and then try to work with that government in finding a solution.
Exactly. And the fact that they won't, Hassan, shows their real agenda. They want still to topple the regime in Damascus. Otherwise, they would obviously coordinate with the regime in Damascus that has been fighting these people at huge cost for more than 3 years.
Absolutely.
Hassan, thanks for the call. Thanks for the call, brother. I need to press on. Forgive me. Joe in France is next. Joe, go ahead.
Hi, George. I just wanted to say you were mentioning earlier on about Cameron planning to bomb ISIL in Syria, and that he would most likely go ahead and bomb the Assad forces and probably try and bomb Assad himself.
Yeah, they'll try and influence the outcome of the war.
Yeah, using that pretext, you know, bombing ISIL, but they really want to get Assad, you know. But just on that point, I think people need to be aware that if that happens, and if and when that happens, it'll probably happen in the context of some kind of a provocation, you know, maybe a NATO plane or a British Air Force plane being shot down. And certainly they have a lot of Western agents within Syria, including members of ISIL.
Sure, but also Syria itself has very, very effective Russian-supplied anti-aircraft weapons. Mm-hmm. And any aeroplanes flying over Syria without permission from the government of Syria would risk being shot down. And they have the means to shoot them down.
I'm just wondering if Assad would be crazy enough to do that, because it would give them...
Well, I wouldn't describe it as crazy. If enemy aircraft were flying over my country, I would expect my armed forces to shoot them down.
Yeah, well, he's damned if he doesn't, damned if he doesn't anyway, right?
That's the dilemma we're now in, Joe.
Yeah. All right, that's it.
Thanks for your call, and call back again, please. Shahid is in the UK. Let's hear from him. Shahid, welcome to the show.
Assalamu alaikum, George.
Wa alaikum salam.
First of all, I'd just like to say I hope you're well after that attack that
I'm in quite a bit of pain, but yeah. I'm bloodied but unbowed, Shahid.
Yeah. See, George, you know the person that did that to you, the reason that he did that to you is because he knows in deep in his heart that the truth is hurting him, because his country is a terrorist country. They kill women, children. They see, if you go to YouTube and you just type in Gaza, all you see is footages of young children being sniped. This is wrong. And the people of the world need to hear this. The Israeli nation is a criminal, terrorist nation. And you know what? They every time say Islam, Muslims are terrorists. This is wrong. When you push a human being to the limit, you're killing his women, you're killing his children, you're taking away his home. This man, out of frustration, he will do this kind of terrorist act. But the Israeli, they're fighting against a small nation, this defenseless people. One day, they will be, the whole world, they will be in the Israelis will be in shame.
Well, Shahid, the first one now will later be last. The slow one now will later be fast. And everything comes around. And I advise anybody who thinks of themselves as a friend of Israel to press Israel and its public opinion, 96% of whom supported the murderous assault on Gaza. Indeed, many of them felt that Netanyahu was going far too softly, should tell them that to turn away from the idea that you can murder your way to a solution of the crisis between them and the Palestinians. Shahid, powerful call. Must go to Norway. Another Norway. Per. Go ahead, Per.
Hello, Mr. Galloway. Hello.
Welcome. You're on the air. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you, sir. Calling from Bergen, Norway.
Welcome.
Thank you. I just read today that there was an EU claim that Israel is earning millions of euros from a de facto policy of preventing non-Israeli reconstruction aid from entering the Gaza Strip. And I'm not too conspiratoric, but this seems like sort of very beneficial.
You knock Gaza down. And then only your construction companies and materials can be used to rebuild it.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable.
And I bombed so many houses, which are very costly to rebuild, you know. And it seems like coincidental, you know.
Sounds like something out of Joseph Heller's epic novel Catch 22, doesn't it? Per in Norway, thanks for that call, my friend. A lot of new callers tonight, I'm very glad to say, from all over the world, though disproportionately from Norway. We must be doing something right in Norway. We're talking about Palestine. We're talking about Iraq. This time with Reza in Iran. Reza, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much, George Galloway. How
welcome, sir. Go ahead quickly.
Thank you very much. God bless you, all the followers and the protectors and the supporters of freedom and the fighters of the terrorism, the real terrorism. Actually, I just wanted to mention a point about the policy of the British government, the UK, against the Islam and the Muslim people in the Middle East. You know, I suppose that the policy of the UK, the British government in Iraq and Syria, is what I call it, the old policy, the fanatic, dogmatic policy of the divide and rule. I think the actual listeners and the audiences of your program would know that. This is what Joe Ice Baker, a leader of the United National Anti-War Coalition, said. You know that? And the Islamic leader, the supreme leader of Iranian, Ayatollah Khamenei, mentioned this point too. You know, they try to make a war in Islamic countries like Iraq and Syria invisibly. This is what actually causes me to laugh at this actually happening. They make a war invisibly while trying to take control of the situation and the things visibly, for example, by the motto of fighting against terrorism, by the motto of we want to save the country, we want to fight against the terrorism. This is what is ridiculous.
Yeah, yeah.
The people of the world, you know, should think. It's just the point that we think about this. We should think about this. This is very simple. But what really makes it complicated is that a little bit complicated, not that much complicated, you know, is that Israel, America, and the UK government, these governments are trying to make a triangle to fight against Islam, to fight against the actually the freedom of the Muslim people. They fight and they want
think,
to take control
I think
all over the world.
I think, Reza, you've hit the nail on the head there when you qualified the point that you made. They're not against Islam.
Yeah.
They don't care how many people pray, how many times, what direction they pray. They don't care about that. They care about free people. And they cannot accept that the Muslim world should be a free Muslim world. They can't accept that because their purpose is to loot, to steal, to suppress, to occupy, to do whatever pleases them in their interests. And therefore, their hatred for Iran is clear because Iran stands up to them. Iran doesn't take their orders. Iran doesn't allow foreigners to steal its wealth. Reza, I've got to go because I've not got much time and I have one or two things to say. First of all, 80% of the callers this evening, 80% were new callers. This is phenomenal. The audience for this show and this great channel, Press TV, which has given me this platform all of these years, is growing and growing exponentially around the world. Bring one more viewer to this show next week. Everyone, every one of you, find one more viewer. Secondly, I've been in agony for the last 6 days. I sustained serious head injuries, injuries to my jaw, and serious injuries to my back and my ribs. Not one single Arab embassy, including the Palestinian embassy, even sent me a message of sympathy. But the new ambassador for Iran certainly did. I'll be back, God willing, next week.